Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Unlimited Realities with Lisa Zimmer. I'm Lisa and I'm thrilled to offer my two guests today for my show to offer to you. We have two wonderful researchers and wise teachers, and first we're going to talk with author and teacher Ernesto Ortez, who's the founder and director of Journey to the Heart, a company dedicated to uplifting consciousness and the well-being of people. He's an artist, an author, a facilitator, teacher, and therapist, and he's internationally certified as a healer, providing Akashic records and teacher training, as well as certification programs. And you can find out so much about him on his website, which we will get to, and we will talk about his latest work and book, which is called The Akashic Records by Ernesto Ortez. It's the sacred exploration of your soul's journey within the wisdom of the collective consciousness. And I'm very, very excited to talk about this because for 30 years I've been walking into metaphysical bookstores and I've been asking the bookstore owner or the manager, please take me to your books about the Akashic Records. And some of them, their interest would be piqued and they would be excited because not many people have come in asking about that. So they go and they look and they spend all this time only to find out there's very little, if anything, had been written up until recently about Akashic Records. So Ernesto, welcome, welcome to Unlimited Realities. Thank you so much for being my guest today, and thank you so much for writing the book, The Akashic Records. This has been so long overdue and such a chock full work of research and information. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It's an honor to be here with you and to share with your radio listeners. It's, like you said, it's a vast field of information that we all need to know about.
Yes, yes. So let's dive in because, like I said, a lot of people may have heard about it, they may be intrigued about it, but it is still something that a lot of people don't know much about. So let's start with a very basic question. Can you tell the audience what Akashic Records are?
Yes, definitely. The Akashic Records, just to put it in simple terms, are your book of life. They are mentioned in every major religion from around the world. And they are the records of your soul's journey from the moment of the inception of your soul to this present moment. So what the Akashic Records are is the history of your soul's evolution, past and present, and they also offer the possibility of the unfoldment of future events. The word Akasha is a Sanskrit word that means primary substance. So this is the field, this is the energy from where we are all originated. You know, we took birth, our souls took birth in Akasha. I call the Akashic Records or Akasha the Library of Congress of the soul. Imagine that you can walk into the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., and there's this vast, I think it's 5 billion books available there. So imagine that you can walk into that library, the Library of Congress of your own soul, and have access not only to your book of life, to see what is the progress of your soul, the progression of your soul from past to the present, and be able to look at patterns, limitations, addictions, codependencies, all that sort of stuff that may be coming from this life as well as previous lives. But at the same time, being able to talk with the record keepers there, to the masters that become teachers, when you have a specific interest in anything that you can possibly think about, you know, your life. So the Akashic Records are not here as a religion. They're not here as anything to replace the belief system or the knowledge that people have acquired in the past or in the future, but they're coming to push everything to the next level of your own individual potential. So it's just really an amazing field.
It is an amazing field, and I absolutely love that you have tackled such a field because it is so vast, and there is, you know, there's simplicity in its complexity, and I love how you have brought it with genius to create it in such a form that people can accept it so readily. And what I really appreciate, because I work in the field of intuition, I tap into the collective consciousness in my work, and this is very, very, very real and very personal to me. So it's very, very blessed that I have been able to have you on my show, because this has been really, really exciting for me. And I want to talk about how did the Akashic Records, you have a prayer in your book, and it's absolutely earth-shattering but also resonating. So when you read it, my body just started to really feel the pulse of it. And I want to talk a little bit about the Akashic Records. And how did the Akashic Records prayer actually come to be known, and how can we utilize it?
Yeah, definitely. The Akashic Records prayer, the way that it is written in my book, it was given in Mexico in the 1960s to a man. His name was Johnny Prochenska. This was a Spanish man from Czechoslovakian descent, and he was chosen basically to receive this prayer. So the prayer was given originally in Mayan, and then it was translated to Spanish, English, French, and many other languages right now. The prayer itself is written in the language of spirit, the light language, sacred geometry. So every word that is in that prayer is encoded and is alive. So the key is not to change any words of that prayer, because you end up somewhere else and not in Akasha. So when we read the prayer and we do the right and necessary preparation to be able to step into this sacred field of Akasha, when we do that, we are creating a vibrational affinity between the prayer and ourselves. And when that happens, boom, there is the click. And that click is that we are now, it's as if we enter an elevator and we start reading the prayer, and by the time we finish, we are on the penthouse, the doors open, and there we are in the field of Akasha, where, you know, we can enter that field to receive guidance and information, where we can receive healing from the masters. I mean, it's just a field of unlimited potential.
Right.
So that is how the Akashic Record came. You know, many people that are significant psychics, they have these true psychic abilities like Edgar Cayce, Alice Bailey, Nostradamus, and many others. They did not need this prayer. I don't have any special talents like that. In fact, I really don't want them, because to me, simple is simple, and spirit is simple, and here we are. Spirit has given us this beautiful prayer, this beautiful system that is simple, and I can just walk into this field with the sacred prayer and be connected at any times without having to have any special psychic abilities or any of that. The only requirement, Lisa, is to have an open heart. If we have an open heart and we follow a formula, which is right there in my book, I teach it in my classes, etc., then, you know, it is inevitable that you enter into the field of Akasha.
And it is a feeling vibration, isn't it? There's an energy that happens, would you say, when you walk through
that? Yeah, because of that vibrational affinity that I'm talking about, it's as if there are unlimited unseen fields that are present in our lives. Like, we cannot see electricity, but we flip the switch and there it is, present.
Right.
Just like that, there are unlimited fields that when we learn how to fine-tune our senses, bring our senses to a higher degree of its own potential, then we can start tapping or connecting into these vast fields of potential. And the Akashic Records is the vehicle that can elevate our vibration by connecting to this light language, sacred geometry vibration that is contained within the prayer. And then we are ready to start connecting or tapping into these other fields that have unlimited potential.
Now, when we tap into that field and we have a connection with our teachers, our guides, can you talk a little bit about who the masters the teachers and the loved ones are that come through with the Akashic Record.
Yes, definitely. The masters and teachers are, many of them have been individuals that have walked on this earth, they have earned their complete and full ascension, and then they are on this field. Many people, probably your radio listeners, know about the Great White Brotherhood. You know, they have been around for many, many years, and the Great White Brotherhood are these saints and sages that have ascended to these levels of consciousness, this field, and many of them become masters of Akasha. But also the masters of the Akashic Records are souls that are so pure that have never taken embodiment. So then we are tapping into this field of pure love. That is the essence. Akasha is the field of pure love. So the masters and the teachers, so they're all masters. When we walk into this Library of Congress, we can ask for a specific information. So if you have interest on a specific type of healing, Reiki, Shen, or anything like that, you can ask the masters to bring you the masters that have the know-how for you to learn more about this particular field of interest. Now, that master becomes your teacher. So, therefore, the masters and teachers. Now, the loved ones, through the masters in their infinite wisdom, know that many people that live on this earth have troubled relationships. And you have troubled relationships with your parents, your grandparents, other people, whatever. So some of them die, and now these are souls that get trapped in the astral plane. And they are not going to be able to make their full transition through the astral plane until they have a resolution with the individual that is alive. So it could be that you have problems with someone that has passed on, or the person that has passed on has problems with you. Now, these are the loved ones. So when the vibration is just right, when you are ready and when they are ready, through the Akashic Records, the masters bring them out of wherever they are, the loved one, to be in front of you, to be in your presence, for you to have dialogue with that individual, with that soul, and bring resolution to the conflict or the troubled relationship that you had. So, I mean, what this is about is not bringing or have karmic patterns between, you know, being transferred from one life to the next, and we all know that that happens frequently with families, friends, etc. So this is a beautiful dispensation with the loved ones.
Now, is this something that we are aware of when we are going through this in our awakened state or our dream state, or is it a very subtle state that comes in more of a meditative state when we come before our loved ones, when there's that resolution, that closure, that healing that happens? Is that something that happens more in a subconscious state or a sleep state or an awakened state?
No. It is, the Akashic Records is conscious work. It's just that. I mean, just conscious work. Because only out of being conscious about what we're doing, we can make significant changes.
Right.
The Akashic Records, I teach three aspects of many aspects, but three very important aspects, the view, meditation, and action. So when you open your Akashic Records and you're in the presence of the masters, then you dialogue, you have questions that you bring to the masters about anything. And then they will give you the information that you need, and that information is what becomes the view. So you are like the witness that is now looking at from a non-attached, loving, kind space. You're looking at yourself, receiving this information. Now, once you have that information, then you take it to meditation. Meditation is the laboratory of the self, and there are many, many different styles of meditation, but in this case, what we want is to review within meditation what we have received in the view. So when we bring the view and meditation together, then we end up with a formula for action. And that is what it's all about, because otherwise it stays in meditation or in the view, and if we don't give it action on the physical plane, we're wasting our time and no change will be taking place.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. So what I was curious about was, I know that I've had I've had experiences in my dream state with loved ones who have passed, and I have had dialogue with them, and I've had a lot of clearing and closure with loved ones in my dream state. So my interest in that was it something that we consciously bring in and we say, okay, you know, John, you know, I'm ready to clear this air of energy that we've held and bring it in, and then bring that energy, bring that awareness, you said, into the meditative state and clear that, correct?
Yeah. Well, in this case, is when you and the loved one is ready. It can be that the loved one passed away 10 years ago, and you just become aware of the Akashic Records. You start doing the work, and you know that there is some kind of trouble with that loved one, and you want to bring it into your field. But if the vibration is not aligned, the masters are not going to bring John out of the whatever he is, the astral plane or whatever, to have a dialogue with you. So when the vibration is just right, it's like connecting two live wires. Boom, there it is. It's right in front of you. And the way that we receive information from the Akashic Records is using our senses. So either through any one of our senses.
Okay.
Pardon me?
I'm sorry. I was having technical difficulties on the show. Just go ahead. I'm fine.
Okay.
It's good. It's all good.
Good. Okay. So, you know, we use our senses when we translate the information that we receive from the masters. So the information comes down from Akasha, filters down, enters our 8th chakra. By the time it gets into our 7th chakra, that information that is encoded in light language, we decipher through our senses, and that's how we can understand it. Now, once that takes place, then we can dialogue with that loved one so we can have the resolution that you have been able to have in your dream state.
Gotcha. Okay. That's wonderful. That's great, great information. Now, how does our spiritual guide or our guardian angel relate to the Akashic realm? And is there a hierarchy of, spiritual awareness or connection helpers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. You know, there's 5 planes of consciousness that are deeply interrelated or connected to us, the human individual. And this is the physical plane, and this dense plane where we satisfy our basic needs, eat, drink, etc. And then above that is the astral plane. Then we have the mental and the causal plane, and those two are interchangeable. Above that is the etheric plane, and that etheric plane is where we have the angels, the archangels, the spirit guides, etc. And then above the etheric plane is the plane of Akasha, the field of Akasha. We can call Akasha the higher spiritual plane, and the etheric plane, the lower spiritual plane. So many of the angels do not go to Akasha. It's like the archangels do. They go to Akasha, receive information, and they transfer that information down into the angels and into our spirit guides, etc. So you can say that there is definitely a hierarchy. Mm-hmm. We all know that. And on the top of this pyramid, if we look at it as a pyramid, is the field of Akasha where all the masters and teachers are.
Wonderful. Now, when you are, we're talking about accessing the Akashic Records, and we're talking about tapping into the collective consciousness. Now, in doing that, many people may have a belief or thought or thinking that you go into a trance-like state. Could you define a little bit for the audience what that state is like?
You really don't go into a trance-like state with a prayer. In the way that I teach this material, you do not go into that. You create an altered state of consciousness that can be from very mild to really a big pop will take place, but you don't go into a trance-like state. What is interesting here is that we have known about the Akashic Records for, like you said at the beginning, for 30 years you have gone to bookstores asking for this. Mm-hmm. The Akashic Records have been present in our lives for many, many, many hundreds, thousands of years, forever. Mm-hmm. But not until now is when the doors of Akasha have opened up. But last March in Milan, March 20 to 30, I believe it was, there was a symposium. It was called The New Akashic Paradigm, Science and Its Application in Psychic, in Physics, Medicine, and Consciousness Research. The beauty of this is now that Akasha, this field that we're talking about, is now validated at a scientific level. And what the physicists discover, or they're talking about, is a zero-point energy field that maintains an interconnected cosmic field of existence at the root of everything that exists. Now, it's as if we can enter windows to the other side where levels of perception and possibilities are far beyond our ordinary consciousness and abilities, a place where everything collapses into this field that is all interconnected. In this field, we can travel to the past and to the present simultaneously, and imagine the possibilities in doing this, because if this is a dense, thick field that is surrounding everything that exists in the universe, and that's what quantum scientists recently discovered, and they're calling it a quantum vacuum, is this super dense cosmic frictionless medium that carries light at all the universal forces of nature, and it generates a holographic field that is the memory of the universe. Now, if this is the case, that means that we can tap into this field. It's just right there. It's now validated scientifically, and then travel to the past as well as being in the present to correct any mistake that we have ever made. So is there a way to balance karma? Absolutely. This is the best way.
That's wonderful. You intuitively knew that was my next question, didn't you? I was going to say this is the way that's the way karma is balanced. So we go into that field and we look at where our shortcomings are and what we've done and where we can fix that, and we take more control over it. Is that what we're doing?
It's not taking control. Is changing the original imprint at the moment of the event where the karma was created. What we want to do with the Akashic Records is go back to the seed origin of anything at all, whether it is in this life or previous life, Lisa. We can go back to that initial moment where the aggression took place, where the where anything that happened, and then go back there, including at the moment of your birth or going inside of the womb and change patterns in there. So we can go and change the energetic imprint of that. So if it's hate that was the original imprint, we can go back, remove the hate, and now put a new imprint of whatever you want. Love, okay, just put it in there with consciousness. And that is why it's so important to do this work, the Akashic Record work, in a conscious state, at a conscious level, so we don't create in this mediumship type of not being connected to the body energy.
Right. The fragmenting is definitely something that we get a whole lot of other fragmented pieces that come with that, don't we? So there's that groundedness that comes with knowing the truth and tapping right into source. And you've got an incredible gift in teaching your students and all around the world. You're traveling to many different countries and sites and offering incredible workshops and seminars. Tell our audience where they can find you, whether it's a workshop or a website or where you'd like to lead them so they can get more information to tap into you, Ernesto.
Thank you, Lisa. They can go to my website. My website is journeytotheheart.com.
Wonderful.
Very simple. I think everyone will remember that.
JourneyToTheHeart.com with Ernesto Ortez, the Akashic Records, Sacred Exploration of Your Soul's Journey Within the Wisdom of the Collective Consciousness. This has been a wonderful exploration. Of course, there's so much more we could talk about. This has been great talking to you, Ernesto, and thank you so much for being my first guest today on the show. I'm looking so forward to getting more into knowing you and your work and sending some of my own clients to you, because I'm very glad to know you're holding the light and the energy in the South Florida area, because that's It's an important area to hold some positive energy for our state. Thank you for doing that.
It is indeed.
Yes, thank you so much.
Lisa, it's been a pleasure.
Like
thank
say.
You so much.
You're welcome.
Pardon?
Thank you so much. And everybody, journeytotheheart.com, Ernesto Ortez, the Akashic Records, I urge all of you to tap into your collectiveness, your collective consciousness, and really tap into yourself and evolve. God bless you. Thank you so much for being on the show, Ernesto.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, thank you so much. It was wonderful talking to Ernesto about the Akashic Records, and we're moving on to my next guest who will be coming in very soon. That is Ted Peters, and Ted Peters is the author of UFOs, God's Chariots, and he's going to be talking to us today about spirituality, ancient aliens, and religious yearnings in the age of extraterrestrials. Now, I love to have this dynamic duo on today because I had a great show last week with two great interviews, and I had an incredible gentleman on, Genius. And this week, I'm really, really touched by the two men that I have on because I have Ted Peters, and we just talked to Ernesto, and Ted was on one of my favorite shows. So I've been emailing back and forth with Ted for a couple of days trying to get a time for him to come on my show. And I secure the time with Ted. And I'm sitting back that night and I'm watching my favorite show, which is Ancient Aliens, and it's on the History Channel. And lo and behold, I'm just kind of enjoying Ancient Aliens. And I see Ted Peters comes on, Ancient Aliens, the History Channel. So, lo and behold, I have to send Ted a little email and tell him, Ted, I just saw you on Ancient Aliens, and how cool is that? Because this is my favorite show, and here you are. We're going to be talking about what you've got to offer. So this is one of Ted's latest works, but he has written dozens of books on theology and faith and science. He has a blog that's called TedsTimelyTake.com. I'm going to spell it out for you so you can tap into his blog. It's an incredible blog and keeps you really tuned in to the UFO research he's up to speed on. It's Ted's Timely Take, TedsTimelyTake.com, Ted's Timely Take. And Ted Peters has been a researcher of UFOs for over four decades. He's also a professor of theology in Berkeley, California. And like I said, he's authored more than two dozen books on theology and faith and science. So without further ado, let me introduce our next guest, Ted Peters, author of UFOs, God's Chariots. Welcome, Ted, to Unlimited Realities. Thank you so much for coming on my show today.
I like Unlimited Realities. That's better than Limited Realities. So, Lisa, it's a pleasure, and thanks for inviting me.
Oh, thanks so much for coming, Ted. This is going to be a great show. I had Ernesto on first, and now I have you, and he was talking about the Akashic Records and the collective consciousness, and now we're going to talk about UFOs. And what I find so incredibly wonderful about you is that you are a professor of theology, and you're also a researcher of over four decades for UFOs, which makes you an incredibly interesting dichotomy. I find that just so really
wonderful. It's interesting that you point out the dichotomy, because it is, in fact, the case that most of my colleagues who are also professors try to stay as far away from UFOs as they possibly can. So when I have that experience, you know, at a cocktail party, they'll say, oh, this is Dr. Peters, he's interested in UFOs, and somebody will say, oh, I see somebody on the other side of the room, I think I need to go talk to him.
we share that in common, Ted. That brings me to my first question, okay? Because what I love about the fact that you walk on both sides of the moon is that you are, for me, you really give life to life, okay? So what I find is that as we have evolved in our thinking over the decades, and we have, you know, more and more people coming out of the closet and saying, yeah, I believe in UFOs, and yeah, they could exist, do you find that many of the religions are becoming more open-minded to ETI, actually looking at it maybe more as an extension of God rather than God versus aliens, since the Vatican kind of like said a few years ago, we believe there could be intelligent life out there. Do you think there's been a little crack in the armor as far as some religions go? I know typically no, but a little bit maybe?
Well, actually, I think we'll find that most people who self-identify as belonging to one of the classic religious traditions, whether it's a Christian tradition, Islam, Hinduism, or Buddhism, the average believer is far more open and accepting of the possibility that we have neighbors in space than the media assumes, and that the average scientist assumes. I actually ran a survey on this and asked people, and the survey showed that, oh yes, there is a small fraction, less than 8%, within each of these religious traditions where people say, oh no, if it's true that we have space neighbors, my faith will face a crisis. But the overwhelming majority, we're talking pushing 90% now, of Catholics and Orthodox and various kinds mm-hmm. of Protestants, as well as Buddhists, are going to say, you know what? I'll have a spaceman sitting next to a pew any Sunday. Actually, that number is divided in half, with some saying, well, they're not really too sure, they don't expect a problem. And then the other half saying again and again, Earth is so small and so marginal, and God is so great, we cannot imagine a universe of this size without God having other creatures somewhere else. So that seems to be the dominant point of view. It's not exhaustive, but it's dominant.
And the dominant point of view also has a little bit of fear associated with it, because I know that I'm your cousin in another life, because I walk that dichotomy as well. I was raised by my mother as a devout Roman Catholic, and my father believed in UFOs. So I have a complete split down the middle of me of very traditional beliefs and very out there concepts that, you know, I choose to talk with certain people with. So the belief of intelligent life out there is something that I have felt and known forever. And the fact that we find out the many different concepts and ideas and beliefs and theories that are out there in intelligent life, the many people's fears come from the fact of their limited view of what they believe UFOs or ETs are. So they have this visual that creates fear. And I believe that if they can get beyond the visual and actually go into the aspect of soul or heart or consciousness or intelligence or awareness, it would diminish some of this fear. And you'd even have that 8% that's a little bit wishy-washy kind of becoming more open-minded. Now,
what you're calling the visual, I think I would associate with science fiction, especially movies that depict the aliens as a military enemy, diabolical enemy, in a way that looks like the Soviet Union back in the days of the Cold War.
Exactly.
Those people who have had UFO experiences, or those who really are devoted to the UFO phenomenon, tend not to think that way. They don't think of aliens as an invading military force. They they rather think of them as beneficent, as those who are more advanced in science and technology and even morality and spirituality than we are, and we could only benefit from contact. So I like to draw a sharp line between the science fiction on the one hand and then those who are sort of authentically embracing the UFO phenomenon on the other.
Right. Okay, great. Now, would you lend us a little insight and wisdom in regard to the topic of aliens and angels, the belief that some of our visions or our stories throughout the Bible of angels actually extraterrestrials?
I think it sort of makes logical sense for us to take a look at these ancient reports of angelic visitation, and occasionally the angels have wings, which mm-hmm. I think the wings are kind of a shamanic, having to do with shamans, a symbolism that they fly to heaven and they learn the secrets of heaven and then they come back. So I think there's a certain generic symbolism going on back in the ancient world. And then we today, especially after World War II, for some reason or another, are far more secular. We don't want to believe in supernatural things, but science and technology do all these marvelous things. So I think it's kind of a natural for the ancient astronaut theorists to try to re-explain ancient angels in terms of visitors from outer space. And because technology is so marvelous, we think, well, maybe these flying saucers and the UFOnauts who are in them, maybe they're technological angels. So in some ways, what's happening in the UFO phenomenon is that the duties of the angels are being taken over today. Now, could it possibly be that in ancient Israel, when a prophet got called by God and an angel came to visit, or when Mary, the mother of Jesus, was visited by Gabriel, mm-hmm. could this be a visitor from another planet? Well, let me just say, I think it's reasonable to ask that question. I'm a little bit reluctant to just take modern technology as a bulldozer and just ride roughshod over those ancient scriptures that way. But as I say, I think it's a reasonable question. And then one could actually turn it around and say, well, maybe these space aliens who are visiting us are actually angels who are in disguise as astronauts.
and so there could be like a level of intelligences or awarenesses or extraterrestrials then, perhaps.
Yes, and I think that one of the curious things about the UFO phenomenon today is that many people, Lisa, and I'm sure you've talked with them, have experiences with aliens that look a lot like angels. They'll say, well, this alien is talking to me in my mind, and I've got a telepathic connection, or mm-hmm. something of this particular nature. So, you know, you're not talking with an alien in a spacesuit and having trouble translating what they're saying. No, no, there's a kind of spiritual connection. And that cannot be described in terms of science and technology. And so I think there may be, at that level, more of a connection between what people are reporting today and angelic visions, you know, 2,500 years
right.
ago.
I love when people like you are bringing science and religion together, because it kind of solidifies belief, theory, and actual result. And I really like that whole proof, shall I say, even though we're supposed to believe in the soul, there's that proof that validates it. Yes.
I hesitate to use the word proof, but I use the word consonants. I think that there's a consonant relationship with most of science and most of what biblical believers want to have. I think it's consonants, not proof, but, you know, that's good enough.
Okay, I gotcha. Now, you talk about, and this is something that's a really controversial but intriguing topic. I love this topic. Talk to me about the Hopkins theory regarding hybrids. You talk a lot about the different types, and I just really want to get into the hybrid aspect because that seems to be something that's like starting to be talked about a little bit more right now.
Turned out to be a real puzzle for me. And so in the book, I tried to walk the reader through how do we understand these reports where a person will say they were abducted from their bedroom, taken through the ceiling, and then finding themselves aboard a spacecraft, usually women, but there are some men who report this as well. And they're examined by the gray aliens, examined as a doctor would examine you on a table, and lots of activity having to do with the genitary and impregnation and the birth of hybrid babies, and then sometimes the mother is invited to the spaceship later to cuddle and love the baby while the aliens watch it. I mean, these are just stories that boggle your mind. And Bud Hopkins, along with Whitney Strieber and John Mack and David Jacobs, all kind of worked together in the late 1980s and early 1990s on these cases. And one of the reasons why I wrote the second edition of this book was to try to integrate that into what I had seen in the UFO phenomenon for decades prior, and this seems to be anomalous because prior to that, most people who had a UFO close encounter of the third kind with aliens found it either very positive or at least neutral, whereas now, from Bud Hopkins on, we're seeing these terribly negative, terrifying reports that look like abuse. They look like sexual abuse in one fashion. So I just want to say that's a problem, and I try to walk the reader through that and try to share a couple of hypotheses that could possibly, you know, throw some light on it.
And it's also one of those aspects that kind of feeds the fear for people who are already a little bit fearful of just the subject of UFOs. You know, it's like it just takes it to that whole other extreme. And so I know, you know, in talking to people, many people associate all UFOs as the same. And they associate, oh, well, if one person was abducted, then they're all bad UFOs and it's all bad ETs.
Uh-huh.
And, you
know. Right. Well, now, when you've talked with abductees about this kind of hybrid thing, what have you thought, Lisa? What do you think might be going on there?
Well, you know, I think that there could also be a hypersensitivity within the people where, you know, they are maybe not totally grounded within their own belief system or totally grounded within their own emotional strength.
Yeah.
And so they did have some encounter, but perhaps there was some sort of a like the trauma of coming back or the awareness of coming back created some sort of disconnect or disassociation. Because the fear aspect is really more predominant than the encounter aspect when I listen to those stories. You know, it's more of a sensational, almost a scary scenario.
Yeah, I think if you and I were to, you know, this evening before dinner, have any kind of a UFO encounter, we're going to be overwhelmed. And fear is going to be a natural reaction whenever we're overwhelmed. So it's
sure.
not unusual, you know, to have fear. But as I said in the past, usually that fear was mitigated by mm-hmm. either gravity or even the affection and benevolence, you know, of the space visitors. So well, that's what's new here. You know, let me mention the John Mack thing on fear. If you may recall, John Mack was a Harvard
yes.
Psychiatrist who wrote a blockbuster book about 1994, maybe called Abduction, with 17 or 18 cases of this type of hybrid abduction, etc. And yes, these people did report not just fear, but they reported being manipulated and pushed around and abused, I think, is not a bad word. And what John Mack did was simply report all these negative experiences. Well, I was bothered by this, so I went to Harvard and had a long conversation with John Mack about this. I said, I don't think this is in continuity with what's been going on for the last 40 years in the UFO phenomenon. And I said, most people are going to have either a positive or a neutral experience. And I said, mm-hmm. in some cases, these experiences are religious experiences. Oh, he said, well, Ted, you haven't read me closely enough. And he said, that these people actually, in time, you know, we're talking about a couple of years after their experience, reinterpret their experience as a religious, life-transforming experience. And then Mac wrote a book a few years later, which he showed that the initial abusive experience was actually transformed into a positive religious experience. So this is complicated, but I think you know, the fear thing is temporary. It's not permanent.
Right. It's their need to process it, and so they have to process it through their common emotions, and then evolve to maybe a higher level of awareness in their emotional interpretation. Because it seems like the same scary retellings are very similar, and the energy of the people who are telling it are very similar. So mm-hmm. there may be an awareness level that they've only reached when they've had that encounter, and then after having that encounter, they've been able to process it in a more thorough or expanded viewpoint, and, you know, maybe got a little bit more from it.
Yes, I think that's just what John Mack described as happening, and it makes sense to me as it makes sense to you.
Right. It's just, you know, there's so much more of it that I'm glad it's becoming more common talk, because it's one of those things that has, you know, as we know, it's been around for thousands, if not millions of years, and we
mm-hmm.
are, I'm sorry?
No, go
but
ahead.
I'm sorry, I thought I heard somebody come through. But there's this piece that what we don't know, we're afraid of. And so if we can bring more information to the masses, I don't think we're really going to be that fearful of knowing that there's another species that has intelligence within this universe. To think that we're the only species of intelligence is a pretty egotistical perspective anyway. But... you know, I love the fact that you're using, that you use this research and you combine it with theology and religious concepts and beliefs and theories. It, to me, it's more, it, it, encompasses and expands, actually, the aspect of what God is. It brings an additional extension to what God is to me, because it just broadens the awareness. So I'm hoping that your book does this, brings this out for people.
I certainly feel that way myself. I just a story on that broadening of the idea of God and God's creation. I interviewed Charles Hickson, who is one of the two Pascagoula, Mississippi fishermen who was abducted by a flying saucer. And at any rate, I'll spare the details on the experience. But I asked Charlie, you know, how did this affect your religious beliefs? He says, well, Dr. Peters, I'm what you call a hard-shell Baptist. And I believe now there are other worlds up there, and God's creation is just a whole lot bigger than I used to think. And I think that's kind of emblematic of what people do experience. This universe is huge.
Right.
You know, it's God's playpen, you know, all 13.8 million years of it.
Right, right. That's a beautiful statement. That's about as simple and poetic as it gets, isn't it?
Yes.
Because there's, you know, you have so many, and who, I'm you know, please forgive me, Baptists, but you have carried the torch of being very, very, you know, conscious in your religion. So to have a Southern Baptist expand his viewpoint to reach that is enlightening for all of us. But, you have this piece here where you've also created the Peters ETI Religious Crisis Survey. Can you talk a little bit about what that is?
Yes. Well, I asked people who self-identify as religious, if you were to have to face the fact that we have intelligent creatures as neighbors in space, would this precipitate a crisis in your personal beliefs? And this is where the overwhelming majority, as I mentioned before, 92% said no. And it doesn't matter whether you're Orthodox Christian, a fundamentalist Christian, liberal Protestant, or what have you. They also basically said no. Then I asked, well, what about the leaders in your particular religious denomination or tradition? Well, a few more got to worry about their leaders. Their pastors and their bishops might have problems, but I don't have a problem. Still, the overwhelming majority, thought that this universe is big enough. What is interesting is the Buddhists were 100%. There wasn't a single Buddhist who thought that he or she might have a faith crisis. Even the Muslims would say, I think that there are extraterrestrial civilizations and they're all part of Allah's creation, you know?
Okay.
So, now what was interesting is that if you... for the category of non-religious, where a person self-selects, I'm non-religious, which includes two subcategories, atheists and those who are spiritual but not religious. Now, this group said, of course, my faith would not be challenged, but those religious people over there, those religious people, they're going to suffer a crisis. And I thought, that's interesting. Religious people themselves are going to have a crisis, but the non-religious are worried about the souls of those religious people. So I'm wondering if it's the non-religious viewpoint that makes it into the media, and that's why we kind of get this image, oh my goodness, you know, all these traditional religious people are going to face this crisis, and oh, those poor benighted souls, they're euphoric, they don't have a problem. So anyway, that was kind of thought with regard to my survey, and there are other surveys that back it up, but then other surveys that differ, and so I kind of would like to see in the future a really good, thorough survey on this question, one mm-hmm. that, you know, everybody would respect, and just see if all of our assumptions are correct or, you know, not.
Right, and this is okay. So now we get to the end of your book, and you talk a little bit about how God is not a space alien. So even though we have our beliefs and our religious beliefs, and we have our understanding of ETI, we're not combining the two, like you were talking about earlier. You're not the visitation and the birth of Jesus and all of that. That God is infinite, but that the two are. Am I correct in that?
I am glad that you brought this up. Yes, you are. I try to simplify it by asking the question: well, are UFOs or visitors from outer space really God's agents? And I want to say no and yes. And the no has to do, first of all, with the ancient astronaut theorists suggesting that what happened in the ancient world, the world of the Bible, or even the world of other religious traditions, what happened was that our ancestors were so stupid and ignorant that when they saw advanced science and technology, they didn't know how to interpret it, so they interpreted things supernaturally. It's a way, so to speak, of eliminating the spiritual dimension that our ancestors might have ferried, and which you and I think, want to preserve in the face of science
right.
and technology. So that's my no answer. But my yes answer has to do with the predominant way in which the aliens speak to us and through us, and the message from 1950 right on down to 2014 is, put away your weapons of mass destruction, stop testing
right.
atomic bombs, embrace peace and global brotherhood. And more recently, and this has to do with John Mack's reporting of the hybrid or abused abductees, is its concern for the environment. The space aliens want us to take care of our planet. So you've got these two messages, stop war and
right.
take care of the planet, that the space aliens are giving us. And I want to say, hey, that's the voice of God. I don't know, it doesn't have to be Isaiah or Ezekiel. If a space alien gives us those messages, well, those messages are from God, because that really is God's will for the health and the flowering of the human race and this planet that we've been given to live on. So in that sense, yes, space aliens are, you know, visitors from God.
Okay, wonderful. Now, have you ever, we're gonna wrap this up, and I want to bring them back to how they can get in touch with you. So I want to again mention your TedsTimelyTake.com, which is Ted's blog, and it's full of incredible research and his up-to-date insights. Is there any place else you would like to bring the audience to find you, Ted? And I have
right.
one last question for you before you go. Have you ever had a UFO encounter?
No, but I would love to have one.
Me too. Me too.
Why did they not find my address? I'm worried about this.
I know. I don't understand why they're not.
Yeah, yeah. TedsTimelyTake.com. It's got the UFO material, but largely it's the interaction between faith and natural science. And here in Berkeley, we have the Center for Theology and Natural Sciences. We publish a journal called Theology and Science. So that's the dominant theme of my work. And when I deal with the UFO phenomenon, as exciting as it is, I like to raise those issues of faith and science all the way through. And so that's the continuity with my work. So anybody who wants to visit Ted's Timely Take, you're welcome.
Oh, thank you so much, Ted. This has been a true joy for me having you on. And please keep in touch, because anything you have on the agenda to write or do or speak about, please come on my show again. I'd love to chat with you. This has been such a delight.
I'd like to come on again, and all best wishes to you and the Unlimited Realities.
Well, thank you so much. This has been a true joy. Ted Peters, UFOs, God's Chariots, Spirituality, Ancient Aliens, and Religious Yearnings in the Age of Extraterrestrials. Get it. It's a great book. Thank you so much, Ted. I look forward to your work. God bless you and all you do.
All right. God's blessings to you, too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.